Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Going to begin our program today by taking a look at skin cancer prevention, detection, and treatment. And our guest, Dr. Dick Niles. Dr. Niles, a dermatologist. He practices in Oconomowoc and Watertown. Been with us a number of times to talk about this topic, and I'm pleased to have him back again today. If you have some questions, are you mindful of minimizing your skin cancer risk, or have you or someone else close to you been diagnosed with skin cancer? Love to hear from you. And any questions you might have at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can go to our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post your question there. Dr. Dick Niles, welcome back. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Morning, Larry. Good to talk to you.
There are several different types of skin cancers, aren't there? At least a couple?
Sure. The three kinds that are important are, first of all, malignant melanoma, which is the dangerous one that can actually kill people. And these are usually solitary growths. You just have one. You don't have three basal or malignant melanomas. And it's a pretty obvious growth, not only on sun-exposed skin, but sometimes on sun-protected skin, and although 99% of them are from big sunburns over the years. Some may be sneaky, and there may not be a direct cause that one can think back on. And those need to be found early. People can die within a year. It can be very dangerous. So that's what we're really looking for. The other one, other two, basal cell skin cancer, which is sort of a bleeding spot that keeps on bleeding, and then it heals over, and then it bleeds a little bit, then it heals over. Or squamous cell skin cancer, which tends to be sort of a rough bump that's always in the way. If we find those this year, that's great. We can remove them. If we find them next year, we can take them out also, and the scar will be just a little bit bigger, but they generally don't go inside and do any harm. So those are the three general kinds that are common and that we should be on the lookout for, and sun's the important factor.
We had a Facebook comment from Bridget, whose husband has a mole type bump above the knee, and he's had it for about 10 years or so at least. He doesn't even realize he's picking at it, and it's gotten bigger. Now there seems to be blisters around it, sort of angry red skin. Wondering, should he be getting in to take a look, have someone look at it?
And I know I have that same note here, and I think that even if it's infected, it's probably a good idea to have it looked at, and then that infection can be taken care of, and then the wound, and then the growth can be addressed. But sometimes I think we can see through the infection and see what's really there in the background, and it may only be that there's one visit that's necessary and not a series of visits. So I think that generally a dermatologist could figure that out fairly simply. Now, it's also probably not a bad idea for his wife to keep slapping his hand, but that's a whole different deal.
All right. Doug in Mount Horeb has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I've got a question about how to do a visual skin scan, and actually I'm talking about my experience with two different dermatologists, two different physicians at the same well-known clinic in Madison, and I've seen both of them twice. And in one case, the physician, actually both physicians have found various precancers on my body and taken them off. But in one case, the physician, when they do a skin scan, puts on a pair of magnifying glasses, uses a very bright light, goes over my entire body, has me lift up my limbs, takes a comb, looks in my hair. And basically, the thing takes about 15 minutes. The other physician has me walk into the room, take my clothes off, stand in the middle of the room while the physician stands there about 3 feet away and says, okay, turn around. And I turn around, and the physician says, I don't see anything, you're fine. Takes about 5 minutes. I've actually asked both physicians if there is any difference in terms of the efficacy of the great difference in those two kinds of inspections, and they both said, and all the results are the same. And I'm skeptical, and I wonder what you think.
I think that's a very interesting question, and most people don't see people from one side, a dermatologist from one side of the spectrum, and then a dermatologist from the other side of the spectrum. But we all know that there are people that are more compulsive or less compulsive. It takes, I saw a recent article, it said that it takes less than 1 second for a dermatologist, or maybe it was 1.5 seconds, but anyhow, it takes a very, very short time for an experienced dermatologist to say whether this is a melanoma or not. I'm more on the I'm in the middle, but more on the side of not 15 minutes with a magnifying glass on, because melanomas are generally not going to be that small. Melanomas, to my way of thinking, are an across-the-room diagnosis. There are, I made the diagnosis a couple of years ago at the YMCA when I was getting dressed, and across the room there's this guy, and I introduced myself and said, excuse me. But that's how I describe them. I describe them as a black sheep of the flock, the one that people can actually find themselves. And I think that people can find them. The one melanoma that you might have should look completely different than anything else that you have. And I think that we probably make people too crazy by describing them using the ABCDs of melanoma, but I would like to use sort of the black sheep of the flock idea. There should be one. If you have a melanoma, it will stand out. It will be one spot. Now, you can't see inside your under your hair. You can't see your back. But someone else, your spouse, could look at those areas and see those also. So I'm more on the side of the of not putting on the magnifying glasses than I am putting on the magnifying glasses.
Okay, that's good to know. Then I won't start canceling my appointments when I get the other physician.
There you go, Doug. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Danny in Chilton, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling because I have a question about, I think they're called atypical mole cells.
Yes.
My significant other, he has lots of them on his upper back.
Right.
And I've read that there is a genetic component to this. And there's one, and that they can, there's something to kind of watch out for, keep an eye on. And there's one that looks kind of iffy to me.
Yep.
At this point, and he's had a couple removed.
Yep, and now, they've been?
Go ahead.
And the diagnosis has been?
Well, that's the thing. The last dermatologist he saw kind of blew him off. And said those are just the results of ingrown hairs, and there's just nothing there. But that's not what I've read. It's the kind of thing where he's got lots of them all over the, you know, all over his upper back and mid torso.
This is another complicated question, and one that there is still a fair amount of controversy about. These can be called atypical moles, which means, well, they're not like the normal mole, or they can be called dysplastic moles, which means faulty growth. That also sounds bad. Or they can be called Clark's nevi, and nevus is our word for mole, after Dr. Wally Clark that discovered these. Well, Clark's nevus, that doesn't sound as bad as dysplastic nevus or atypical mole syndrome. So sometimes it's what you call it. The other part of this is that pathologists are sort of scaredy-pants guys sometimes, and they don't like to just say normal mole. They like to say normal mole, but. And they sort of CYA with it, and they say a bunch of stuff on the pathology report, and that drives everybody crazy because it's not just normal mole. These things have been, it's a difficult and long sort of answer, but I would say that in general, these things are not dangerous. If you have a whole bunch of them that look similar to one another and a couple are biopsied and they're found to be Clark's nevi, if there's a family history of melanoma, I think that would be important. If there isn't a family history of melanoma, then I think that if he's looked at once a year by his physician or his dermatologist, and if there is a bad-looking one, if there is the black sheep of the flock someplace, have that one removed. But I wouldn't be overly concerned without a family history of melanoma.
Okay.
All right.
Is there anything to them being just the result of ingrown hairs?
Well, I don't think that somebody would say that about a mole. It may be some other growth that there's a perception on your boyfriend's part that it's a mole, but it was a different thing.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll give Pam in Fond du Lac a chance to join in. Hi, Pam.
Hello.
Morning.
I was wondering if you know anything about Agent Orange causing melanoma and...
about what kind of melanoma?
I'm sorry, ma'am. We're having trouble. You kind of blacked out there for a minute. But could you repeat that?
Regarding Agent Orange and melanoma with our veterans, and if the VA recognizes that Agent Orange has caused melanoma in our veterans.
Agent Orange and melanoma in veterans.
Yes, I haven't. I know that Agent Orange causes a severe kind of acne and causes a number of other things, but I have not read any reports of melanoma being caused by Agent Orange. I think we would have a really tough time figuring that out because melanoma is not a common thing. Maybe the chance of you or me getting a melanoma this year is 1 out of 10,000. And if your risk was 2 out of 10,000, we would have a hard time measuring that difference. So I don't know the answer, and I'm not sure that anybody's going to be able to figure out the answer to that. If someone's concerned about a mole that they have, or some growth, it's an easy thing to take care of and get removed.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Pam. I'm sorry we had the breakup there. Appreciate your call. Sarah in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious to see, my 8-year-old daughter has been diagnosed with psoriasis, and his son has been kind of her medicine in that, clears it up really well in the summer. So she's been kind of prescribed, like, direct sun exposure for a certain amount of time a day. Now, is that going to put her at higher risk for skin cancer when she's older?
Another good question. Not as complicated as the other ones. Thank you. it's an odd thing. You'd think that the guys that have had psoriasis forever that are 80 years old would have skin cancers coming out of every place because they've been out in the sun forever and ever and ever. But they don't. And I sort of started noticing this a number of years ago, and then maybe 5 years ago a study came out saying that it looks like patients with psoriasis are protected to some degree from skin cancer. So I think it's not as negative as one would think, and if sunlight is pretty helpful and she's not burning, and you can keep her psoriasis under good control with that, I think that's not a bad treatment, because the other treatments are creams that you rub all over and messy kinds of things. And if she tans well, then I don't think that that's a big problem.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Dick Niles, dermatologist who practices in Oconomowoc and Watertown, our guest today as we talk with him about skin cancer prevention, detection, and treatment. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about skin cancer today with Dr. Dick Niles. Thank you so much for listening in. If you have a question for Dr. Niles, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. You could email us at talk@wpr.org or just post a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to the phones again and to Dave in Grand Chute. Dave, hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
My doctor gave me a prescription for a couple of what he called basal cell carcinomas on my face 6 weeks ago, and I've been taking that imiquimod or Eldera.
Yeah.
And I stopped last night because that was the end of the 6 weeks. We're leaving on a trip. I'm going to see my doctor when I get back, but I'm just wondering, it doesn't look any different to me than when I started. Is that typical? Or he didn't want to do a biopsy because it was on my face. So,
Well, it's not what you want. What you want is that they're called immunomodulators. These are drugs that get your own immune system to get rid of whether it's warts or precancerous spots or skin cancers. You want your own immune system to get rid of them. That would be great. I think their downside is that they're cumbersome to use. It takes 6 weeks. If it's going to get rid of it, that area should have gotten red and inflamed and raw and oozy and messy.
So that's there was a scab in one section, but it never did what you just described.
Yeah, that's what ordinarily happens. So either you're in the 10 or 20% whose basal cell skin cancers don't get better with imiquimod and you need some surgical treatment, or it's not a skin cancer to start with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you get back, go back and see that physician, and you may need a biopsy or maybe not.
Okie doke.
All right.
Thank you.
Have fun on the trip. Thanks for calling, Dave. And Dave in La Crosse, on to you. Hi, Dave.
Okay. You got me on?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. If I have a potential issue and I want to go in, should I ask to see a dermatologist, or can I see, go to the walk-in or, you know, maybe my internist?
Okay. Now we're into politics, huh? I think a couple of things. First of all, I think walk-in clinics are not going to ordinarily give you great answers.
Okay.
I think that if you want to see a dermatologist and you have to wait a day or go see the emergency care thing on Sunday night, I'd probably wait the day because I think you should get a better answer. I mean, that's our deal.
Okay, especially if I might have to have a biopsy.
Yeah, and I think that dermatologists ordinarily know what it is before we biopsy it.
Okay.
Other physicians are going to biopsy it not quite knowing what it is. So I think that to toot our own horn, dermatologists, I think, prescribe or put the right punishment on the crime.
Got it.
Yeah. That answers my question. Thanks so much.
Okay. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in Green Bay, we are turning to you now. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a question regarding suturing after the removal of a skin cancer. I am wondering whether you would get better results from a plastic surgeon than you would from a dermatologist in the suturing process.
It depends on which dermatologist and then maybe which plastic surgeon. Now, plastic surgeons do all sorts of complicated stuff, and if there's a big skin cancer, for instance, on one's face, it might make sense for a plastic surgeon to do that. And even at the Mohs clinic, where they do all the big basal cell skin cancers and squamous cell skin cancers in Madison, they sometimes have plastic surgeons that repair things. Having said that, there are lots of little skin cancers that we remove every day in the office that can be sutured up, and they come out just fine, too.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for calling. And Neil in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Neil. Neil, are you there?
Oops, wrong name, but I think I'm...
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I am wondering if PUVA treatments make me more prone to getting one of the three skin cancers.
Yes, PUVA treatments, that's P is for psoriasis, like psoriasis is PSO. Psoriasis starts with a P. UVA and the others, the UVA light, like there's UVB light. But PUVA is a treatment, a light treatment where you stand in a box with light bulbs all around, special light bulbs, and you have a treatment that's intense light and works in 95% of people that have psoriasis. So that is a treatment, and there is, because that light is so intense, there is a higher incidence of having skin cancers in those patients. I know we talked earlier about general sun exposure not being a big risk for psoriatic patients, and maybe if I stood in the suntan in the PUVA box, my risk of having skin cancers would be a lot higher than a psoriasis patient. But yes, there's a little bit higher risk.
But I don't have psoriasis.
Oh, okay. Then you probably have higher risk.
I have, well, can you guess what I have?
Okay, let me see. Can you give me the card, Larry? you probably have eczema, or you could have parapsoriasis, or you could have morphea. There are a few other things you could have.
Cutaneous T-cell lymphoma.
Okay. Well, I think that's that's not a common thing. That's a very unusual thing, and PUVA is a fabulous treatment for that. So I think that you are at a slightly higher risk, but compared to how much good you get out of it, I don't think it's much.
And so you think I should kind of avoid sunlight, perhaps? You know, ordinary. Don't lie on the beach, in other words.
Well, yeah, don't lie on the beach, but I wouldn't stay in the basement either.
Oh, mushroom.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There you go, Nell. Thank you so much for calling. And Connie in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. My question is about a little blister that keeps reoccurring on my lower lip. It's just where my lips close, and it's right in the center of my lip, and it comes up in about 24 hours. It's like a blister that is really bugging me because it's on my lip. And then usually I break it with my teeth, and it seems like there's some kind of stuff that oozes out of it. Then it goes down, it goes away, and then it comes back about a week later.
Yeah, inside your lip.
Just kind of where my lips meet. So it's actually right to the edge.
Okay.
And you can't see it with my mouth closed, so I guess it is inside.
Right. So at first I was thinking about herpes simplex, which, as you went on, I don't think that's what it is. I think that you have a mucus cyst, and think about this as being one of the saliva glands that's all over the inside of your mouth being clogged up. And then that saliva builds up behind there in a sort of a ball, and then finally it has enough pressure inside there, you bite it the right way or something, and it drains out. And these can last for months, back and forth and back and forth. It's always in the way. You bite into it every time you eat, and then all of a sudden it's gone.
Okay.
One can also remove it by injecting some Novocaine and sort of shaving it off and maybe singeing the base of it with electric needle. But it'll probably go away.
Okay. I'll just let it go away then.
That sounds like good treatment. That's pretty cheap, too.
Yeah, that's cheap treatment. That's for sure. Martha in Menominee. On to you now. Hi, Martha.
Yes, hello. See, I was reading recently about some of the chemicals that are in sunscreens, and I don't know how good this information is, but there was some research that an article was quoting about how retinol, palmitate, and some of these ingredients with benzones in them have been found to cause more cancers than they prevent, and I thought maybe your doctor guest there could recommend some maybe natural or less chemically oriented ways to apply a sunscreen that didn't have these risks.
Okay. I think the risks are minimal or zero from those things, but there are, and I think the natural sunscreens are going to be probably pretty difficult. You can get probably zinc oxide paste or zinc oxide, and it just filters out, it reflects off the sun, you're going to look white. There are physical blocks that you can put on that are like that. You can wear clothes, you can wear hats, lots of, wearing a shirt has a probably built-in, any shirt probably has a built-in 15 or 30 sunscreen and a hat, so you don't have to necessarily put a lot of stuff on your skin, and you could be out there before 9 o'clock or after 5 o'clock and not really have to worry about getting a lot of sun exposure. But I think the few times in Wisconsin that we really need to wear a sunscreen, the amount of, chemicals that one puts on the skin is a pretty minimal thing. And I'm just not in the camp that says, I'm not in the oh my gosh camp.
Okay, there we go. Thanks, Martha. We got an email from Jim in Menominee. This is kind of going back over some things, but that's all right. What about moles? Are they more susceptible to skin cancer and what to look for?
Okay. Regular moles are, we all have moles. We have on average 20 moles, and they have to get bigger as time goes on. You get them when you start getting them when you're a kid, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. So as long as all your moles are sort of in the same family, they all look like they're part of the same flock, let's say, they're should be nothing to worry about. Melanomas can arise either from normal skin, or they can theoretically arise from a normal mole. Probably at least half of them arise from normal skin. But if you're on the lookout for that black sheep of the flock, the one that doesn't belong, then you'll be able to find that one because it'll be easy to see that one. That one will stand out as being different, not necessarily blacker, but just different in whatever way that might be.
And on to Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was wondering if the guest had any research in like alternative ways of fighting skin cancer, like not using the creams or the knife.
I think the answer is basically going to be no. There have been, in the old days before medicine really got started, like before 1940 or back in the 1890s, there were various kinds of caustic chemicals, acidy kinds of things, that you could put on your skin cancer, your warts, your growths, and sort of get rid of them. But if you don't get rid of the whole thing, that's going to be sort of a problem. We can go back to the 1890s. I'm not sure that I want to. But there aren't any other, rub the bark of this tree on your skin cancer and it's going to go away for sure. That's sometimes how various treatments do get started, and they can be helpful, but none are proven to do a fabulous job, and certainly one wouldn't want to use those on a melanoma. If you have some other thing that you think is a skin cancer and rub something on there for a couple of months and it all goes away, I guess that's okay, but I doubt if that'll happen.
There you go, Mike. Thank you. And Kathy emailed, what if you have a concern about a mole changing and it's months before you can see a dermatologist? At that point, is it better to be seen at an urgent care center or your family doctor?
I would say it'd be better to be seen by your family doctor. Again, an urgent care, I'm not sure that they're going to biopsy it. They may not be able to help you out at all. I frankly have been mystified by the length of time it takes to see physicians. We'll get you in a couple of days because we think that that's important. But again, it's a mystery to me why it takes so long to get in.
And George in Egg Harbor, we'll get to you now. You can join in, too, with your questions of Dr. Dick Niles as we talk with him about skin cancer prevention, detection, and treatment. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. It's an open line, so we'll get you on pretty quickly. George in Egg Harbor, on to you now. Thanks for calling, George.
Oh, thank you. Doctor, I got a question. If you have squamous, definitely get squamous, or it looks like squamous on the top of your head, would you just get it, once it's biopsied and said it's squamous, would you just get it taken out and then check it in 6 months, or would you recommend a Mohs procedure be done on it?
I think that Mohs, let's just talk about Mohs for a second. Frederick Mohs invented a procedure where you take off layer after layer of cancers. He was a general surgeon and died a few years ago in his 90s, and he's from Madison. So Madison is the hub of Mohs surgery, and he's been doing it there. He was doing it there for a long time, and they have an excellent program. In a Mohs surgery procedure, they take off layer after layer, not like cutting it out and putting in stitches and you have that lump of skin. If you think of cutting that like a loaf of bread and then looking at one of those slices, those slices might be in between where the skin cancer has already gotten further out than where you cut. But when you take it off layer after layer, you look at the under surface, and that may be hard to visualize, but it's a 100% basically way of getting rid of any skin cancer. So should all skin cancers be taken care of that way? Well, it's sort of a big deal to do it, and I think that maybe 99% of skin cancers can be taken care of in 10 minutes in the office. Again, I know that there are skin cancers before I start. I do a biopsy, and I take care of it at the time because I'm going to be right almost all the time. So I don't have people come back for a bunch of visits. I just do it.
Yeah, I had you know, a double, you know, two sides of that opinions given to me. And so my regular dermatologist had actually cut it out because he knew what it was, you know. And he said, just come back in 6 months and we'll check it. And I got worried because my dad had a problem with squamous. So I said, now I want to get the Mohs done. Well, when they did the Mohs, on the first cut, they found cancer in three places. And so then they had to do the second cut. But still, I heard another doctor say, well, you know, it usually doesn't get in the lymph system if it's on the top of your head, so Mohs is probably an overkill. But I don't know. I got worried when they found it in three places and had to go the next cut. Why, I was glad I had it done.
Yeah.
Right. There are going to be those situations, that 1% where that's an important thing. And it's hard to know. But in my office, if everybody went to Madison, if I sent two people there to Madison every day for their skin cancers, that really wouldn't work out very well.
Yeah.
So I can take care of them, and they're fine, and I don't necessarily not see them back for a while. I'll keep an eye on things. But, you know, 1% of people need Mohs surgery.
Russ in Milwaukee wonders if dark-skinned whites and people of color are less susceptible to skin cancer because of their skin pigment.
Certainly they are. The darker your skin, the more built-in sunscreen you have, the less likely you are to get a skin cancer. So those, and so there's the color of your skin, and then there's your exposure. So if you're a Irish cowboy, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
If you're an Italian baker, you're probably not going to be in trouble. So we don't worry about people with a lot of pigment.
Mary in Manitowish Waters. Mary and Nina, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have, I can best describe it as kind of a squishy spot. There's actually a couple of them, you know, on my scalp, under my hair, that, you know, feel like possibly a raised type of mole, but they seem like squishier than that.
Okay. All right.
Who should I go to figure out, or do I need to go to somebody to figure out what that is?
If you can't figure it out, I don't know that your hairdresser is going to be able to figure it out. about she or he might have an opinion, though. But I think that they're going to turn out to be sort of fleshy moles that stick up a little bit, and they're sort of like a raspberry in how they look. They're sort of bumpy like that, and they're fleshy. I think that would be a simple thing probably for your general practitioner, your internist, or your dermatologist to look at, and they would say, ah, honey, don't worry about that. They're fine.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And now, Mary in Manitowish Waters, we go to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My question is, I have thyroid disease, and because of that, I have white spots like polka dots all over my forearms where I've lost skin pigment. Do I have to be particularly careful of those spots when I'm out in the sun?
Are those spots only in the areas where you're in the sun, like the what you would say is the top of your forearm?
Yes.
Okay. They're probably not from hyper or hypothyroidism.
Oh, okay.
They're probably negative freckles.
Okay.
So there's a concept that if you're in the sun, you're going to have pigmentation problems, and most of us think about a freckle, a sort of positive pigmentation, but you can have negative pigmentation. You can have mispigmentation of spots. So lots of people have normal colored skin, some tan skin, some a bunch of positive freckles, a bunch of negative freckles. So they're at slightly higher risk because they have a little bit less pigment, but not that big a deal.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And Rita in Sturgeon Bay, we'll turn to you. Hi, Rita.
Good morning. I'm wondering if squamous cell and basal cell cancers, do they always develop into melanoma and, you know?
No. They have nothing to do with melanoma.
Okay.
It's like an orange turning into a truck. I mean, these things are separate issues to start with. They are all separate kinds of skin cancers. They run true to themselves.
Should they always be taken off?
Yes.
Anyways?
Yes.
Okay.
Because a basal cell skin cancer is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're going to have this hole in your face that's bleeding all the time.
Oh.
That's not really ideal.
No. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Chris in Sparta, on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. I went and saw a dermatologist several years ago. I have a spot on each of my shoulders. It looks just like a seemingly kind of a pimple type thing. But what happens is my whole shoulder will get real sore and tender in a large area around it. And then it'll kind of like come to a head. And the doctor told me the reason that it got sore or it bled at all was because I picked at it. And I know I didn't because it's on my back. And he told me it was more to be like a knot in a piece of wood. And that I just have a little area there in my skin where this is, and that he could remove it, but he said it's really nothing and I shouldn't worry about it. And I'm concerned because it does, like once a year, we'll get like a little scab on it and it'll bleed if I, you know, in the shower and wash. But I'm not doing anything to it, and I'm just wondering what more I should do.
Okay. It sounds like it might be a dermatofibroma, dermato skin, fibrous, you know what that means, and an oma is a non-cancerous growth of fibrous stuff in skin. And they're like a little hard bunch of a scar, and it could just get rubbed with normal activities and then get inflamed and irritated around it. And the problem with the back is that the back doesn't heal that well, so you might be trading in dermatofibroma, which gives you a little trouble, for a scar that's sort of thick.
Okay, so I don't need a second opinion.
Well, you already got one, but you might need a better one. I don't know.
Okay, not a third opinion.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate your call. Dr. Niles, is there a good website or place for people to go or even call if they wanted to learn more about these skin cancers?
I'm sure that the American Academy of Dermatology, the AAD, it's probably AAD.org, has all the stuff that you want to see. And I'm pretty sure that places like WebMD and the Mayo Clinic website, there are lots of pictures. It's very simple to find a lot of information, like it is on, you Google anything now and you can find it. I even know what you look like, Larry. So.
Well, I hope it wasn't too big a disappointment.
Here's a shocker, Larry, a shocker.
Oh, Dick, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We'll have him on again. Dr. Dick Niles, dermatologist who practices in Oconomowoc and Watertown. And we'll have him back, and we'll talk with him again about skin cancers. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the involvement of women in agriculture. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.